recent years, mineral interests have been a hot topic in North Dakota. Should you be reserving your minerals?
Stay tuned to the latest Well-Grounded podcast to find out. This is Randy Conan from the Red River Farm Network.
And this is Jason Menke, farmland and beanstalk broker at Acres and Shares.
Well, this podcast brings together experts from the world of agriculture and real estate. We'll talk about farmland values, industry trends, and the economy.
In this edition of Well Grounded, our guest is Joel Brown, Mineral Services Manager at First International Bank and Trust in Watford City, North Dakota. Brown grew up in Watford City, working for his family's oil field service company, which was started by his grandfather during the 1980s oil boom. Joel attended the University of North Dakota, where he graduated with the very first class of petroleum engineers to come out of the new program.
Throughout his career, Joel has had the opportunity to drill wells, operate oil fields, and build pipelines. But his primary area of expertise is in the valuation of oil and gas interests. In 2018, Joel leveraged his oil industry knowledge to co-found Mineral Tracker, North Dakota's first mineral management software platform. Mineral Tracker was purchased by First International Bank and Trust in 2020, where Joel currently serves as the Mineral Services Manager in Watford City.
In addition to his professional life, Joel serves on several boards at the local and state level, including the McKenzie County Commission, the North Dakota Development Fund, and the Clean Sustainable Energy Authority. Welcome, Joel.
Thanks, Jason. Thanks, Randy. Happy to be here.
Well, it's quite a resume. Is there anything you haven't done in the local oil industry?
Oh, that's kind of funny, Randy. Like Jason had mentioned in my intro, I grew up in a family that had been around and in the oil and gas industry since the 1980s. My grandfather started a company. He had no high school education, certainly no college education, but had started a really successful oil and gas services company back in the 80s that lasted through the downturn in the oil and gas industry in North Dakota, through a lot of really sleepy decades, and was able to come through that and be in a great position when things started to boom in the mid-2000s when the Bakken was discovered as a productive play. So I grew up kind of during that period of time as the Bakken was just beginning to be a little bit of a known commodity, and knew that I wanted to work in the oil and gas industry. I had a little bit of a penchant for math, so decided to go to school for petroleum engineering. Seemed like a reasonable fit. And since I knew I wanted to be in the industry, one of my goals, even as I was going to college, was to just get a really broad range of experience in the different things that I was doing. So rather than just taking an internship with the same company every summer as I was back, I would try to work in a different sector of the oil and gas industry that I hadn't worked in before. And then from there, I got involved with a relatively small team that worked for a private, locally owned company, where we really just got to build different types of businesses within the oil and gas industry, build them up, hand them off to a different management team, or build them up and sell them. So I really have gotten a chance to get my hands into a lot of different things in the oil and gas industry. But for the most part, my focus has been on the financial side. And what I really enjoy about my technical experience and background, and then being able to marry that to the financial side, is that it really brings the entire industry and the oil and gas industry, that is, into a really simplified format from my mind. What is the bottom line? How can we make these things work? Whether you're talking about a pipeline or a new wildcat field, or drilling more wells into the Bakken and Three Forks, where your production is really well known, being able to manage all those different risk factors, and then ultimately communicate that to the people who are being impacted, which is part of why we started Mineral Tracker in the first place. So maybe a little bit of a long-winded answer to a simple question, Randy, but in short, no, I've been exposed to almost everything in the oil and gas industry.
Joel, please give us a high-level view of the mineral industry in the state and what's involved.
Absolutely. North Dakota, I mean, even stepping back from just oil and gas, North Dakota has been a mineral powerhouse for a long time. Our oil and gas industry started in North Dakota in 1951 with the very first productive well being drilled near the Tioga area. And we went through booms and busts and booms and busts over the decades since then. But aside from that, I think you guys are well aware of the lignite coal industry. There's a quote out there that I really enjoy that North Dakota produces, I think it is 7 times as much energy as it consumes. So we're exporting a lot of energy from our valuable minerals in North Dakota to these other states, whether that's going down the Dakota Access Pipeline to Illinois, or oil being transported out west to be refined out on the West Coast, or our coal being used in power plants here and shipping electrons down the line to power our neighbors. We really have a very rich state as far as minerals go, and that doesn't even touch on some of the other things that are exciting out there. But from my experience, and I think certainly today, the most valuable mineral in the state of North Dakota overall is oil. And that really came with the discovery of the Bakken Formation, not as a new formation that we just had never seen before. They were aware of it even back in 1951 and before that, that the Bakken Formation existed in the Williston Basin. But what they didn't know at that point in time was how to extract the oil from this tight, tight shale. I've got a sample of Bakken shale on my desk in my office, and I love to hand that to people when they come in, and it's really incredible to think that in this shale that looks like a shale that someone might make like a slate countertop out of almost, that there are all these billions and billions of barrels of oil. And what we discovered in the early 2000s, actually across the border in Montana, was how to combine two technologies that had been around for a long time to unlock the potential of the Bakken. And those were horizontal drilling. And the reason for that is that rather than just drilling vertically through a formation, if you can turn 90 degrees and extend the amount of surface area that you are exposing your wellbore to that productive formation, you're just able to access a lot more of what you would call a pay zone. So we extended how much exposure we could get in the Bakken Formation by implementing horizontal drilling. And the second needed to be combined with that, and that was hydraulic fracturing, which for a while when it was an unknown commodity was very scary to a lot of people. I think that we've done enough fracking in North Dakota at this point in time that people are relatively comfortable with it. But in essence, all you're doing is you're using a large amount of water and a large amount of sand to pressure the rock 2 miles below the surface of the earth to create fractures, just cracks in the rock that then become filled with sand. And where oil can't flow through that really dense, tight shale formation, it can flow through the sand. So that just creates another pathway for oil to be able to flow back to the wellbore that you've drilled into the Bakken. So didn't want that to get too scientific or anything, but the impact that this has had in North Dakota has been absolutely tremendous. We became really the first, what we would call unconventional. Unconventional just means the combination of horizontal drilling and hydraulic fracturing. We became the first unconventional basin in the nation at that point in time to produce oil, and quickly skyrocketed past all of the other oil producing states except for Texas. We became the second highest oil producing state in the nation. We have since gotten bumped down a little bit on that list as they've been expanding the same type of technology down in Texas and New Mexico. But the even today, where our production isn't the highest that it's been through the entire boom, the oil prices aren't the highest. They're actually pretty high right now. For the state of North Dakota, 50% approximately of our state tax revenues come directly from the oil and gas industry. So the impact that oil and gas has on the state, by far, at least on the state government standpoint, is second to none. And what it's meant for people like me out in Western North Dakota, there is an absolute tremendous amount of opportunity to, you know, start in a career, even for people who don't have a college education, to be able to come out and start in a very lucrative industry like the oil and gas industry, has drawn a lot of people from all around the country and all around the world. McKenzie County, where I'm located, was the fastest growing county over this last census period. So we really have experienced an absolutely tremendous boom out here. And it doesn't just impact us here in Western North Dakota. I think that the impact can be felt all across the entire state.
Well, besides oil, are there other minerals that you track or manage?
For the most part, our focus is going to be largely on the oil and gas industry. And even with our team that we have here at First International and where we have Mineral Tracker, we've really drawn people from the oil and gas industry. So my background in petroleum engineering, we have attorneys that were previously attorneys for oil companies. We have even our admins were specialists within oil companies prior to coming and joining the bank. And really the reason for that is that oil in Western North Dakota is so widespread. It impacts so many people, and so many of those people really need help understanding the complex transactions that go on in order for them to receive royalty payments. So that's really, you know, the basis of our business and what we do. We're generally aware, though, of a lot of the other things that are going on because they just naturally overlap with a lot of the things that we experience in the oil and gas industry. So we, for the first time, have seen a proposed pore space lease. This is something that is brand new in North Dakota because of some legislation that was passed in the last session, and a lot of interest in what we can do in North Dakota to capture and sequester carbon dioxide. So we anticipate seeing more of that. We really see people in the carbon dioxide sequestration industry, a lot of them coming from backgrounds in the oil and gas industry. The other one that comes to mind immediately is coal. And I would actually say, for as valuable and impactful as that is to our state, it's not one where me or my team have a lot of experience, and just kind of the nature of how that industry functions. But there's also another interesting and future developing industry in North Dakota, in southwestern North Dakota, in rare earth minerals. And this is, you know, something that is very, very early stages, and I would say at this point in time speculative, but I do anticipate that if that industry does actually come to fruition, it will once again be oil and gas people and probably even members of our team that are going to be working on and looking at how can we track and make sure that the mineral owners out there are being compensated correctly.
With that, then, can you tell us a little more about the Mineral Tracker?
Absolutely. Mineral Tracker was it was a really interesting development. Myself and a partner who is also a petroleum engineer from McKenzie County, we had worked together for nearly a decade and always had a vision of creating some line of business to just help local mineral owners. We both had family who were mineral owners. We had a lot of friends who were mineral owners, and could have direct insight into how complicated being a mineral owner actually could be. It's just a lot of nuances to being a mineral owner, and you can sit by and just let the oil companies, let the landmen take care of everything. But what you miss out on then is if mistakes are made, if there are questions that are out there that the oil company needs to have answered before they can start paying you, a lot of times those just completely get missed. And so being a mineral owner should really be a far more hands-on experience than it typically is. And so we wanted to open up a Main Street style business where people could come in and bring their boxes of paperwork and their problems with their mineral ownership and their royalty payments. And we would just roll up our sleeves and try to take care of it through mineral management. What we discovered along the way is that business began gaining traction was that we really needed a software solution to help us manage our own clients. And so when we looked on the market and saw that what we wanted really wasn't out there, we started down the simple path of asking, could we build this ourselves? And neither my partner or I were not computer programmers. We're oil and gas guys who kind of pretended to be tech guys for a little bit. we got partnered up with some developers and created a fairly simple mineral management platform, and realized partway along the way that this could be more useful than just for us to manage our clients. It was a simple enough program that really anybody could use it and instantly gain access to more knowledge and more information in an understandable way, an understandable and easy to access platform for mineral owners out there. So that's kind of the quick abbreviated story of how we got to a point where we started Mineral Tracker. And today, Mineral Tracker is used both here at the bank for managing a much larger portfolio of mineral owners. We are the number one user of our own software, but continues to expand in just users from in North Dakota. And you'd be surprised at how many people outside of the state of North Dakota own minerals in Western North Dakota and are realizing benefits from it. But really, the way that I like to describe it, it's kind of like the Morningstar of mineral ownership. You can log into it. You can plug in a little bit of information about the minerals that you own, the wells that you have interest in, and it's going to start pulling data from all of these different public sources and then some private sources that we've created on our own in a reservoir engineering database to be able to tell you things about where the minerals are through a interactive oil and gas map, where are the rigs in location, where are the permits in location. When you do have production on your minerals, we will pull in all of the historical production from the wells that you hold interest in, which for some, for some people might just be one well. For other people, just through the natural course of inheriting minerals from family, can be hundreds of wells, which becomes a lot to keep track of. But Mineral Tracker allows you to do all of that automatically, and even comes with features with the ability to forecast what your royalty income might look like in the future based on what we call decline curve analysis, and understanding how those wells are going to produce into the future as the reservoir pressure declines. And I think the number one thing with Mineral Tracker is that you gain access to a team of experts who backs it up. And we find that for a lot of people, what they really just want is to understand more about what it is that they own. And this platform can help to accomplish that. But sometimes it still just requires the hands-on touch of somebody who's seen it 1,000 times before.
Joel, most of my land sales are in Northwest Minnesota and Eastern North Dakota. About 10 to 15 years ago, I was at a farm show in Devil's Lake, and one of the presenters was from the oil and gas industry. I think she might have even been from Tioga, but one of the questions from the audience was, are there minerals in North Dakota that we should be concerned with? Is there oil? My vague recollection of her response was the topsoil in the eastern part of the state is far more valuable than anything we'll find underneath. What are your thoughts or take?
Yeah, it's funny, I get questions like that quite a bit too. A lot of times I'll get questions specifically from people who are around the Minot area, because the Bakken Formation does extend as far east as the Minot region in general. The problem though is that, and the question that I get so often is, when are they going to start drilling out in Minot? And the problem is that the oil and the organic material that would be in the Bakken Formation at that place within the basin, and anywhere really further east of partial, kind of near Newtown, North Dakota, is that the oil isn't thermally mature, or the organic material within that formation isn't thermally mature, which means that it basically just has not broken down into oil. And so the answer that I kind of jokingly give to our friends in Minot who ask those questions is that at some point in time, but it's probably going to be 100 million years or so before you'll be able to realize the benefits from the Bakken Formation in Minot. That said, the Bakken Formation is really just one formation within the Williston Basin. Directly below it is the Three Forks Formation. Between those two formations, which are produced very similar to each other, they make up about, I believe it's very close to 99% of the oil production in the state of North Dakota. But all these other formations that we were drilling back since 1951 There are still active wells within those areas, and some of them even do extend as far east as, you know, really the Minot region, and even up into Botno, there are some other formations that are being produced. The problem for our friends, especially on the eastern side of North Dakota, is I would definitely say that whoever the speaker was at the conference was right. The topsoil is going to be far more valuable than anything that you'll find underneath, at least from an oil and gas perspective, I can say with a high level of confidence, because it's outside of the area of the Williston Basin. And if you can imagine what a basin is, just imagine that the hard rock, what we would call the Precambrian rock, that really has nothing interesting about it. It does not have different levels of strata. It doesn't have different types of rocks within it. It's just Precambrian hard basement rock forms what's essentially a bowl. And within that bowl, there have been, you know, seas, and there have been swamps, and then there have been periods of time where it was dry land, and you get this great depositional environment where different types of sediment along with organic material from plant life and animal life are all being deposited over time. As more and more rock gets built up over that, the heat and the pressure increase. That's what breaks it down into oil and natural gas. And so all of this takes place within these areas called basins. And there are a lot of basins spread out across the world, but even specifically in the U.S., you've got the Williston Basin up in North Dakota with the Bakken and Three Forks formations. There's a lot of headlines about the Permian Basin or the Delaware Basin down in Texas. You have the Powder River Basin, which also produces, in addition to a lot of oil and gas, it produces a tremendous amount of coal down in western Wyoming, or eastern Wyoming, rather. And you just have these kind of spread out all over the area. The very edge of the Williston Basin creeps up around Jamestown. So I can say with a very high level of confidence that I don't expect there to be any oil and gas production anywhere close to the Red River Valley area.
The other thing, Joel, is that you know, I'll get questions just being from North Dakota if I'm traveling. And you know, one of the things I joke around is that I'm just as close to downtown Minneapolis as I am to the heart of the Bakken. You know, kind of as a safeguard on when I do have people from out of the area who would like to reserve minerals, kind of my general go-to is then let's reserve 50% of them, you know, in the small likelihood that something could happen, at least the surface owner is going to have some skin in the game as well. What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think it's a good approach in general. You know, the story becomes a little bit different the closer you get to a known area with producing minerals. But I think, first off, you know, even if you are going over to eastern North Dakota, even though I've given a pretty solid answer as to or feel very strongly that we won't ever see oil and gas production over in eastern North Dakota specifically, back in, you know, 1950, nobody thought that there was going to be oil and gas production in western North Dakota either. And nobody, even as late as, you know, the 1990s and early 2000s, my grandfather, who had drilled through the Bakken hundreds of times, said he didn't think that there would ever be production coming out of the Bakken. It was just not a producing reservoir. So there are always things that we discover down the road. And now I look back at, you know, the people who back in the 1950s did reserve the minerals, and now they're the generations later are benefiting from those. And those people, you know, come across as geniuses because they thought that there might be something in the future. I think the number one thing, you know, I spend a lot of time thinking about and looking at the value of minerals, and specifically oil and gas mineral rights. But, you know, I'm thinking if the transaction is not pivotal on mineral rights being reserved or mineral rights going with the property, as I would hope that they wouldn't be, or that it wouldn't be a pivotal point of the conversation in eastern North Dakota, I think that the general approach of reserving 50% of the minerals or, you know, any part of the minerals in general is just a good approach.
Most of the headlines that we see related to oil production being up or down, comparisons to other production areas, bring the conversation back to the landowner. For your clients you represent, what's a typical scenario? Do they just receive royalties, or when the wells are pumping, or are there other sources of income?
Yeah, great question. So the number one way that a mineral owner is going to be compensated is going to be from that production. They have a lease in place, an oil and gas lease with an oil company that basically allows the company to produce the mineral rights, which could be completely separate from the surface rights at this point in time. And essentially, they are granted a royalty for each barrel of oil, each cubic foot of gas that is sold for a profit. So mineral owners in general are really just being compensated when production is taking place. It's interesting right now in North Dakota, our production is relatively down from where it was at its peak. Today, we're producing about 1 million barrels of oil a day, creeping up just a little bit from there. But in 2019, we had set records producing over 1.5 million barrels of oil per day. You know, so we're down actually a pretty tremendous amount from what our peak was. However, in 2019, oil prices were significantly less than what we're experiencing today. And even though it's been an incredibly volatile environment right now, for the most part, even if production is lower, North Dakota mineral owners as a conglomerate are going to make more in 2022 than they did in 2019 because of that increased commodity price. Now that gets it's really very specific to each mineral owner, because I, as a mineral owner, don't have a share in each one of the 17,000 wells drilled in the state. I really just have my interest in my particular subset of wells, you know, which could be anywhere from, like I said, the one to a few hundred, but going to be a relatively small subset of the overall state. So in minerals, especially in Western North Dakota, where we have had this long period of oil and gas production stretching back to the 50s, we find that most people, when they've sold their land, did reserve their minerals. And interestingly, most people, when even if they are handing the surface lands down to the next generation that's going to take over the farm or the ranch, they're splitting the minerals very often among all of their children. And a lot of those children have left the state. And that just kind of continues down the line to a point where, you know, a quarter section of land that might have one surface owner on it today could have 100 mineral owners under it, and a lot of them never having ever been to the state of North Dakota. In general, a lot of the surface owners out here still do retain some amount of the mineral ownership, but other ways that those people and the surface owners are impacted, pipelines, actually, you can, there's a lot of money to be made for landowners in granting right-of-ways for pipelines. There are some landowners out here who have made more off of their pipeline revenue than off of their mineral revenue. And rental payments, you know, other things along those lines. It's always interesting to see, you know, not necessarily that there's tension between, you know, the surface and the minerals, but you really do, even when they're separated, they are still so absolutely intertwined. So it's really important for these oil companies, as they're out here, to keep up really great positive relationship with landowners. And the landowners out here have become really savvy, you know, over the past two decades of living within a boom area. They've seen a lot. And so generally they know exactly what they want. They know what the market is for a pipeline right of way, for instance. They know who the good contractors are. They know who they don't want to deal with anymore, you know, things like that. So the overall industry for mineral owners, surface owners in Western North Dakota really just ebbs and flows and continues to develop.
You know, with the booms and busts in the oil industry, is there a sweet spot price-wise for North Dakota production?
Sometimes you selfishly want to just say more, it really is a very insightful question, actually, because what we find in these times where oil prices become really high, first off, what we see is that's really because oil prices globally are really high. And what that turns into is, you know, a global disruption in the supply side and the demand side of the oil market. And so you begin to get scared of things like demand destruction, which is something that we've been very concerned with here over the past year, as we might be going into a recession. Oil prices are incredibly high. That means that less people are going to be taking vacations in the U.S. in areas like China and India, which are the fastest growing markets for oil consumption. You've got a lot of families all of a sudden who can't afford to have a car, can't afford to fill it with gas. So they just stop driving altogether. So you really do want to find a nice sweet spot. But on the other hand, you know, for North Dakota in particular, we know pretty well what is the break-even price for a lot of the Williston Basin. And it varies because the Williston Basin and the Bakken isn't all created equal. There are sweet spots and there are fringy areas. So it varies quite a bit. But when we got down to, you know, the negative oil at one point in time in 2020 and really lived through a period where, you know, $20 to $40, that's far too low for us. We did find that $60 a barrel was actually a pretty sweet spot for the state of North Dakota. I think if you talk to most people, though, they would prefer to see it upwards of 70. Where we're sitting right now is actually a pretty good price point, because wells in North Dakota in general are they're economic. You can expect a positive return on them at $70 plus. At 60, sometimes you stop drilling in some of the fringy areas because you can't make the profit that you need to out there. So I would say in general, if we're sitting somewhere between $60 and $80 a barrel, we're pretty comfortable in Western North Dakota.
Any, as we wrap this up, Joel, any additional comments?
I think I was probably long-winded enough on most of my answers. And thank you guys for allowing me the opportunity to come and talk a little bit about the mineral industry, and in particular, the oil and gas industry in North Dakota. It's a really complicated industry, but it is a ton of fun. For your listeners who have not gotten a chance to get out to Western North Dakota, just to get a sense of what it looks like and feels like, I would invite them, come have your next vacation in Watford City, North Dakota. We've got great access to Badlands and to the Theodore Roosevelt National Park, to mountain bike trails, and then also to Lake Sakakawea and all the fun things that you can do on that. And just come get a sense of it. I know that in the early days of the boom, Western North Dakota sounded like it was a gold rush town that was dangerous and scary, and you didn't want to bring your wife and kids here. But it's really matured into a really fun and beautiful area that's great for raising families. Me and my wife are raising three young children here in Watford City, and just absolutely love the community feel. So I think that what we're experiencing in Western North Dakota right now, at some point in time, there are going to be history books that are written about it. Because it has been so absolutely prolific and revolutionary for the overall oil and gas industry. And, so for the viewers that are, you know, 5 hours away and are kind of curious of what the landscape looks like, invite them to come out here.
Thanks to Joel Brown for being part of this conversation. The Well Grounded podcast is a presentation of Acres and Shares and the Red River Farm Network. If you have farmland or beanstalk questions, please call me at 218-779-1293.
You can also find this podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. It's also available at rrfn.com and acresandshares.com. Until next time, I'm Randy Conan.
And I'm Jason Menke.